Well, welcome everybody to our EV Cafe Takeaway podcast. They've let me do the introduction. That's risky, isn't it? But each week we have guests on to peel back the surface on what it is that they're trying to do to help us get towards the electric future that we all hope for. But this time it's a little bit different because we're trying to get to know each other. So people sort of know us, but not really, really. So this podcast episode is about getting to know none other than Paul Kirby, electric van man, hashtag van geek. The very one who we've all seen. Where's your selfie stick? Question one.
Oh, it's right here. It's never far away.
But all jokes aside, for those who don't know Paul, he's our commercial director within the EV Cafe. But beyond that, he runs his own very successful business, which has doubled in staff this year. Please tell us in your own words all about you and EV Essentials.
Well, I suppose the EV Essentials part of my life only began just a short time ago, probably about 18 months ago, around that sort of time. I had a full year as a limited company doing training, consultancy, media, as with the sole focus of really accelerating the transition to zero emission electric, predominantly transport, with a focus on vans. I don't know. Yeah, only vans.
Why, Paul?
There you go.
Why vans? Well, what is it about vans?
Well, do you know what? There was an interesting statistic some time ago that I discovered, which was 16% of the traffic in our towns and cities are vans. 32% of the harmful emissions and particulates and all of that sort of stuff come from that 16% of traffic being vans. And for me, like many of us on the EV Cafe, you know, that air quality piece, the immediate piece, because the climate is out there, you know, it's a bit ethereal, we can't necessarily get our hands on it, but the air quality, whilst we can't see it, we are seeing the impact of it. And that for me is a big driver in my own life, my own heart. And so I want to make that difference where I can. And vans is a key area. And I've been in vans for, I don't know, 20 odd years, around 20 years. And started, you know, in my first year of working in vans, I actually drove an electric van for, you know, in 2004. They were here a long, long time ago. And then a few false starts later, they really kicked in, you know, in about 2017, 2018. And I was lucky enough to be around and, but nobody else really seemed to want to shout about vans. So I just thought, you know what? I'm going to do it. It's a good idea from a business point of view, because if nobody else is doing what you want to do and you know there's a market for it, that's good news. But also, I just happen to love vans. It's crazy, right?
We do tease you horribly on the EV Cafe. And of course, we're joined here by John as well. So John Curtis is our operations director on the EV Cafe. And I'm Sarah Sloman. So together we form three of five of us. But you are known on the EV Cafe, I believe, as the van man. But where did you guys meet, John and Paul?
Well, similarly, it was, so I met John at a Greenfleet event where he was waxing eloquent, telling people stories and bringing people together in the way that only John Curtis does. But yeah, so we met at a Greenfleet event.
We were at Harlequins Rugby Club in London, and Paul came into the room and all of the Greenfleet organisers sidled up to me and said, "Make sure you look after him. He's a big cheese at lease plan." Okay. And there was this guy wandering around with a selfie stick talking to himself. And I just thought, he's odd. He's just odd. Not quite work him out at all. And so I made it my mission when I was hosting the thing. I asked for questions and you put your hand up. And so instantly the big cheese from lease plan got to ask a question. And he was so eloquent and brilliant. I was like, okay, I need to know more about this fella. And we met up subsequently and had breakfast.
In Bath.
In Bath, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, this rings a bell. So you guys sent a little selfie and I was immediately enraged because I also at the time was living quite near to Bath. And I'm like, where's my invite?
That was it.
And then I tried to take credit for introducing you all together. And actually that just wasn't the case at all.
It was fine.
We never let never let the facts get in the way of a good story.
Oh, no, definitely not.
No, but we do joke, we do tease. And I think that's one of the charms of the EV Cafe is that we are, as we say, often friends first and colleagues second. But I actually met you and Johnny Berry at the same event, which was in Milton Keynes, where we were doing a Love Vans award thing. No, a Vans event. So
it was all before had... that, Sarah. No, but that was before the that.
Do you think so? Where? With the Greenfleet Awards 2018?
It was Elland Road. It was Elland Road, Greenfleet event.
I don't remember that. Greenfleet event.
Thanks a bunch. Jesus.
Come on, this is why we're here. We're pulling back the service. Tell me
everything. You got a champion award. You got a Greenfleet champion award.
Yeah,
in Leeds, yeah. Well, I was there. And I talked to you.
No, I remember that. In my defence, anybody watching will know that I did just say, do you mean the Greenfleet Awards of 2018? I did just say that. So yeah, I absolutely remember that. Of course I do.
Oh, okay. Good.
All right. Let's move on.
That's so,
Paul, you're the van man now, but presumably you weren't the van boy. So can you tell us a little about a bit about your formative years? Who was Paul Kirby back at school and when you left and your first job?
Oh gosh, right. So it's an interesting little world, my backdrop. So my life is a tale of three halves. It's not quite three halves, is it? Three thirds. It's a tale of three halves. In the sense that, you know, we talk a lot about our formative years, and people talk about, you know, their childhood and whether it was good, bad or indifferent. You know, I sit here and I don't look at my childhood as being bad. But if I tell people about my childhood, they go, oh, that was really tough. And so I was adopted. My parents split up, as many parents have split up when I was 10. I didn't see my mum for another 3 years. I then got thrown out of the family home by my dad and went into local authority care. It wasn't the best experience. I wasn't taking O-levels. I didn't get any exams at school. I got probably expelled more times than I got exams results. I was the kid in the back of the class, either glue sniffing or doing something weird and causing trouble and being rude. And then... I graduated and it just kept on going. So I was getting in all kinds of trouble. But then, you know, you arrive at a certain point in your life where you've managed to break every kind of sense of reason, and lots of things that happened in my childhood then just kind of sat under the surface. So I was still, I was a nice kid. Right. You know, I was always personable. I would have fun. I was cheeky and joke around and all of that kind of stuff. But there was a lot of dark stuff going on underneath. And then so fast forward a little bit past the really dark bits and come through into to some of the light, where from my very, very first job, people had to take a punt on me because I had these things that I needed to talk through with them. You know, things where you've broken the law, you've got the wrong side of it, and you need to sort of be honest and open in your interviews. So my very first job was actually driving a Ford Transit van. There you go. So vans go all the way back in my history. And on my first day, I drove it into another car. So I literally had an accident on my very first day of my very first job with this wonderful man that had taken a real punt on me because I was, you know, I was from the wrong side of the tracks. I didn't have any exams. I had been in all kinds of trouble, and he just went, yeah, okay, I'm going to give you a chance. And I drove his lovely brand new special van right into another car and caused about £2,000 worth of damage back in 1987. So the hardest thing of my life almost to that point, and I'd experienced some pretty tough things, but one of the hardest things was to walk in to the office in my first job on my first day and hand the keys back and say, I smashed up the van. And to be honest and to be really open and to tell people what had happened. And the boss was not there, but his wife was there. And she took the keys and looked at the van and went, okay, well, come in and talk to, I've forgotten his name, sadly, but Bill, come in and talk to Bill in the morning and we'll see what happens. And I went in that morning and he said, okay, so tell me about what happened. So I told him about what happened and he looked across the desk at me and went, it's not going to happen again, is it? And I went, no, it's definitely not going to happen again. And he went, okay, go on, get on with it. And do you know what? My life has been characterized by me making really big mistakes and people looking at me in the fullness of those mistakes and going, we still believe in you. Crack on.
What? Why?
Keep going.
What do they believe in, Paul? What is it
I
about
know.
You? Because there is something.
That's for somebody else to say.
Yeah.
Sarah, I'm keen to hear it.
Number one, I think Postman Pat never forgave you and Jesse the Cat's well crossed that you smashed up the van in 1987. second of all, the reason they forgive you is that honesty, that ownership. So yes, something went wrong. Yes, it did. And we in our time together have experienced things that have gone wrong, but you always own it and you're always the first to hold your hands up and say, this is the reality. This is what's happened. And whatever it is that you're presenting, we all just see straight through it and see that huge heart of yours at the center of your decisions that kind of got you to that place. You never set out to hurt anyone. You never set out to upset anyone. And you're the first to apologize or to own up to it. And I think that makes a really strong characteristic on your part. And I know that you champion mental health and honesty and openness and support and networks. And I wondered if your history got you to that position in your career now, wanting to champion mental health. Is that true?
100%. And if I mean, if I could make a law, it would be you must have counseling in your life. It is one of those things. So I first had counseling when I was 14. So I was under threat of being put in a secure unit because I was just emotionally absolutely off the wheels, off the rails, just screaming on a floor, kicking doors, being held by members of staff, you know, kind of doing just all kinds of weird and wonderful things, all the weird and not wonderful things, and getting in a lot of trouble. So I was threatened with secure units. I was threatened with this, or I could go and talk to this educational psychologist, a name who I do remember, a guy called Ron Dare, a lovely man that came out of retirement to talk to me and a colleague. And I was in the National Youth Theatre as a kid. I was when I was 14, 15, 15 and 16, actually. I got into the National Youth Theatre. One of my audition pieces was a brilliant, I mean, my drama teacher was, in effect, a really horrible man. And I'm not going to go into that. But he gave me this audition piece, which said, you need to teach yourself to know yourself as you really are, was one of the lines within that. And this educational psychologist really, really helped me understand a little bit about who I was. Now, I wasn't pleasant and I was full of flaws, but I at least knew who that person was. Fast forward a bit further, with all the sort of gaps in my life, the big, big caverns that I just couldn't deal with through my 20s and 30s. I get to the age of 40, having, you know, not had really much counseling or anything like that. And at another catastrophe, I got divorced. It was, you know, my life fell apart, literally. And I had counseling. And I had weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks of counseling because my head was just an absolute mess. So I was asked to in cognitive CBT, right? You know, this thing where you have to come up with a good memory for every year of your life. And I was like, you what? A good memory? I don't have good memories from 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. There's no good memories in there. So I had to go away and find these good memories, these happy thoughts. And it has taught me that we can help our mental health. We can do something ourselves to support our mental health. But as importantly as that, by being transparent and by being open, we can encourage others to help us. Like, you know, just for you guys to say nice things to me when I rehearse these things that have gone on in my life. you guys saying that is healing, it's helping. And we help one another and heal one another. So absolutely.
Anybody who knows you, Paul, knows that you are somebody who not only spins a lot of plates, but you juggle a lot of balls whilst hopping on one leg and changing your hat 15 times. You are somebody who gets through so much work that it's almost unbelievable. How do you cope with the volume of things that you've got going on in your life? Because you are a machine.
I don't really know. I suppose I, like many of us, focus on the things that I forget and the things that I don't do. So, you know, because maybe I take on too much, many would say that. But because I do that, I tend to focus on the things that I haven't done or I've forgotten, and the people I've let down, because I didn't do that. But there is that sense, I suppose, that driving energy in me is to not let people down. You know, because I suppose throughout my life I have let people down, like, horribly, and you know, maybe with no intention of doing so, but I have managed to do it quite consistently. And now, you know, you just work really hard to not have that kind of feeling around you, where people look at you and go, there's nothing worse. Well, for me, there's nothing worse than that sort of sense of disappointment in somebody else. So, you know, so it's one thing to be disappointed at myself. I just don't ever want to see it in the eyes of somebody looking across at me. And of course, that is inevitable. People will be disappointed in us from time to time. But that's, I suppose, my driving force, is that I don't want to disappoint anybody.
You know who you absolutely clearly have not disappointed. I've been really loving your fatherly approach to your son, who's been doing charity events and getting new jobs. And all of us just loved watching that, because you were kind enough to share your life with us on LinkedIn in particular to get also to garner support for him. Tell us a little about him. Jaden, is that right?
Yeah. So I'm very fortunate in that I have three kids now. One I inherited in Joel, who's in the REMI at the moment, just passed his HTV just the other day, which is fabulous.
Wow, and then Rachel. Sure.
Yeah, he literally passed yesterday. And then Rach, my oldest daughter, she's a horsey girl. And I got her into that. And I love that. She said, oh, I need to get into horses. And I helped her. So I feel very proud of that. And JJ is just a real chip off the old block in that respect. He wants to kind of go and help people. One of the most moving things that I remember about JJ is that he saw a homeless man. This was when he was eight or nine, in Edinburgh, in the Grass Market in Edinburgh. And we'd just been into Tesco's. And we were walking with our Happy Meals, or whatever they call them these days. Well, there's value meals, isn't it? There's Happy Meals is some other thing. Anyway, so the value meal. And he looked up at me and he said, Dad, can I give my meal to the man over there? It blows me away and it makes me emotional, because we walked over and sat down with this guy, which, because I will always do that. That's, you know, when you're in the gutter, you just want somebody to sit in the gutter with you, having been in the gutter many times, you know. So we sat down and I said, I just wanted you to know, sorry.
Oh.
I just wanted you to know that my son wanted to do this for you. I want you to know that you've been seen. Because it's so important to be seen, right? Isn't it? Yeah. And we do this on the EV Cafe, and some of it and LinkedIn is undoubtedly a drive within us all to be seen. And JJ is doing what he's doing, and he's, you know, he climbed a mountain, and he went to Morocco, climbed one of the highest mountains there, and raised some money to help a mental health charity in Milton Keynes that really helped him. And I think it is a natural drive within us all to be seen. And it's good that we get this opportunity, right, to talk about these things and to be seen. And I get my little selfie sticks never far away, because part of me wants to be seen. to be visible. And JJ kind of personifies that. Rach is not that way. Joel, not so much. But JJ does. Yeah, he does. He doesn't mind being seen.
Have you got to the point, Paul, I think you probably have, where you're almost, I'd go as far as to say, famous, in that you go places and people know you, not because they know you, but because they've seen you?
Yeah.
How does that feel?
Well, I think the same is true of all of us in the EV Cafe, and for various different reasons. Obviously, some of us appear on other webinars and things like that, but the EV Cafe does solidify, I suppose, that experience, because people know us from the EV Cafe and a lot of people that we don't know, right? But that when I first did my selfie stick, sort of walking around the CV show in 2016, actually. So I walked around the CV show and I couldn't work out, because at the time LinkedIn, you couldn't put a video on LinkedIn, but you could link it to YouTube. So I put this video on YouTube. It's still there, actually. On a different channel, not on my Electric Van Man channel, which you can follow if you wish. And of course the EV Cafe channel as well. But I put it on, and then people would walk past the, I was working for LeasePlan at the time, walk past the LeasePlan stand and go, oh, there's that guy that was on, that did put that video on. And I, listen, it's at those moments that you discover you've got an ego, and that just got stroked. And so the reality is that, listen, I discovered in 2016, not I probably should have known that before, having been in the National Youth Theatre and on stage and loved all that sort of stuff. But, you know, to have done that and then to get that sort of feedback almost instant was really kind of cool. And so when you put something out on a video and you get instant feedback and all of that kind of process happens, you get in the comments and there's dialogue that's opened up and all of those good things, it makes such a difference to my own well-being, my own person. So I'm sort of stroking my own ego a little bit, but yeah, you walk into the room and when a guy like Martin O'Fire, who's a famous rugby player, walks up to me and goes, oh, you're LinkedIn famous, you're that Paul Kirby. I went, yeah, but you're proper famous, and, you know, it's nice of you to say, but it's kind of cool, yeah.
But don't you see that's why people want to tell you that, or why they do follow you, is because you've been impactful to them. So your ability to impart your knowledge, and you're so consistent as well, we can rely on you. I remember at the London EV show, I didn't realise at the time until I watched the footage back, but one of our, Rick from Generate Media had called you, and I could see you doing something, but I didn't know what it was until I watched the show that he was then recording. So it turned out they got stuck and wanted some information on this van, and you were an absolute vault.
Yeah.
You just opened up and told them everything, and I had no idea what you're doing, but that's a salute to your professionalism, your ability to retain knowledge and digest it and disseminate it in a way that people can actually understand. And I think that's why you've got the gravitas that you have, and you've earned that. That's to do with your personality, your good heart that we talked about, but also your reliability. People can rely on you. You're not going to lie. You're not going to say anything that isn't true. And I think we all have that on the EV Cafe. I certainly can't be paid to say something that's not true. There is no way. I will not do it. My principles are so aligned. I think that's why people are drawn to us on the EV Cafe. And I think you came up with a strapline, actually, driving us all towards accelerating the transition to electric vehicles. And you use it on EV Essentials as well. So that's why I dovetailed two for you, because yes, you are known on the EV Cafe, but you are known well within your own right. And I bet you as little Paul never thought that would happen to you.
Oh, gosh. So little Paul was a nobody. Little Paul was hidden. I mean, I always wanted to be seen, you know, so, you know, hence the like for drama and all of that sort of stuff. But listen, I got two O-levels, and I won't tell you which school I got them in. But that was it. That, you know, my life had no achievement. And so by 19, I was sort of staring down the barrel of a very average life, a very dull life, a life that would be hampered, still is to this day hampered, actually, by some of the things that happened during that period, things I did, things that happened to me. You know, these are things that still impact today. But could I have imagined No. And if I would say one thing that I would love for people to remember from today, it would be that there are, if you open yourself up and you're willing to sort of just be real with one another, there are human beings. We always say it, don't we? There's somebody for everybody, right? In relationships, when you look at those, the odd couple that you think, oh my goodness, there's somebody for everybody. But there is, and there's lots of people for everybody. And if we'll just open it up. So my career was a series of people taking a punt on Paul Kirby, because I turned up, I tried to be real. I tried to say, listen, I've got some skills, not all the skills. And typically I can overcome things. I can bounce back from things because I've had a few things to bounce back from. And at the end of the day, we'll keep going. And people by people, and if you'll be open, then people have a chance to invest in you. And I'm very, very grateful for all of the investment that people have put in me that mean the little boy can now be a man and do what I do. And I'm so, so grateful to the guys of the EV Cafe, but also to all the people that gave me a chance in my career that enabled me to build this platform to now carry on doing what I do. But, you know, I don't want to forget that I can be that person now for other people, you know, to give other people a chance. And I, you know, hope to do that.
So being now entering into your twilight years.
Thanks, John.
let's look at how the future looks, because people don't have to take a punt on Paul Kirby anymore. People know what they're getting. Mm. They're getting quality and knowledge and experience and all that stuff and great humour. What's the future hold for you?
What's the future hold for me? It's a funny one, isn't it? Because everybody's got these 5-year plans and all of these good things, and like they're going to retire at such a date and, you know, have X million in the bank and all that kind of stuff. Well, I don't expect any of the above, and I'm really not sure that I'll ever retire. Maybe I'll have to one day, you know, they'll wheel me off if I live long enough.
In a van?
Obviously. Hello, I'm not getting a hearse. Just chuck me in the back of any kind of van. I'm not going to name one particular brand, but yeah, chuck me in the back of a van and just put me in a hole. That'd be fine. What does the future hold? I mean, look, we have got such a mission, right? I love watching the horizon, seeing what's coming over, because I think we get caught up in what's here and now. So we look at the range on a particular van, or even, you know, God forbid, a car. And we look at that and go, it's not good enough, or it'll only do some of the jobs, or the charging infrastructure, or, you know, transport as a whole. We look at it and we say, oh, it's emitting too much and we can't do this and we can't deploy energy. The energy's in the wrong place and all of those sorts of things. But actually what I want to try and do is look at what's coming over on the horizon and bring that to life for people, so that people can understand that actually, if they get started today, by the time that wave hits, or by the time they get to the horizon, actually they're in safe hands, because there is technology and there is innovation, there is things coming over the hill that will enable them to continue on that journey. It's just being able to see far enough ahead in order to be, so I want to be able to do that. So whether it's autonomous vehicles, whether it's different kinds of batteries, renewable energy, how do we do all of that? You know, bring that to life for people so they can have confidence that they can move down to a zero emission future. I don't care what their zero emission looks like. It could be a bike, could be a cargo bike. It could be, God forbid, hydrogen. You know, if it's zero emission, whatever it is, whether it's electric, hydrogen, any other kind of propulsion. I'm really agnostic. I know what I think will work and what won't, but it could be anything. And that's what I want to help with.
Do you ever think about legacy then? So you're thinking about, you were asked about the future there, but thinking, looking backwards and working from there, what would you like to look back on your career and see? We already see you being a great dad, great family man. You take walks with Caroline, your lovely wife, and look at the sunset. You said the horizon. But I'm always curious what people's legacy would, in an ideal world, be.
The only legacy for me is my kids, really. And, you know, if Yeah, if I'm known for being able to put vans on the road or do this, it doesn't matter too much. If my kids are whole and are able to navigate life with less drama than I've had, and to make their mark and make their difference, then I've done my job. And if I happen to leave, you know, a real focus on vans, I'm also play a part in bringing fairness and balance to the market as it is today, because, you know, we've got this two-tier system of people that can charge at home and people that charge in public, and the vast cost disparities. You know, things like the Motability Operations Fleet, it's a fleet of 650,000 vehicles, that people typically are being elevated out of poverty by giving them transport. They may have a disability that hampers them. You know, how can we bring some equality into the marketplace? I suppose from a work perspective, that would be it. Bring so that all the different types of transport are equal, they're treated equally, they're focused on equally, and we get to make a difference equally. And it's that sense of injustice that drives me mad, actually. I hate injustice. So from a work perspective, that equality and that sort of stuff, but really, actually, if I stopped tomorrow and just love my kids well and give them a start and give them a hope, then I've done enough. I don't need to do any more than that, but I don't think I'm probably going to be very happy if that's the way it is, because I still want to do stuff. That's a great question. Thank you.
A final question from me, if I may, Paul, which is, what's your Spice Girl name? If you were to be something Spice, what would it be?
Oh, Jamers. Van Spice? No, you can't do that, can you?
That sounds illegal, whatever Van Spice is.
It's a really good question. Immediately I was Sporty Spice, but that is one of the Spice Girls, obviously. But, you know, that would be, yeah.
Well, that would require you to honour your New Year's commitment to do some sport, Paul. So we're not going to let you have Sporty Spice today.
I am going to the gym, actually, so, you know, occasionally.
With your gym spice,
I don't know, John. I'm not sure. I suppose because I'm kind of enthusiastic spice, I suppose.
Yes.
enthusiastic spice, yes. It sort of doesn't require any level of knowledge or, yeah. Yeah. So that's about as good as it gets, John, I'm afraid.
You've definitely been Chatty Spice, and we love you for it.
Yes, well, good.
John, what's yours?
Baldy Spice.
Baldy Spice.
Or Old Spice.
I'll be Silver Spice then.
Silver Spice. One thing's for sure, that the Evie Cafe is a big hotchpot of spicy people.
It absolutely is. We're not even a complete set. Imagine there was five of us on screen. Then you wouldn't get a look in, would you? Definitely not. No. But that's the whole point of the Evie Cafe Takeaway podcast. And we'd like to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. We're here for you to get to know us better so you can help believe in our journey and our mission and what will maybe be our legacy. So thank you, John. Thank you, Paul. Don't forget to find us on all the social channels and like and subscribe so you can keep up to date with any future episodes coming out. I've been Sarah Sloman, and this is the Evie Cafe Takeaway.